You are listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
The APN is currently looking for network sponsors. Hear your company right here at the beginning of the show in over 60 episodes a month on 18 different shows and reach 70,000 subscribers. Contact the APN via chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. That's chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com to sponsor the only archaeology education and outreach podcast network.
The Go Dig a Hole podcast is brought to you by the generous support of Desert West Environmental. Check them out online at dwestenv.com. You're listening to Go Dig a Hole. This is your host, Christopher Sims. This show is your archaeology toolkit, where I'll bring you resources to kickstart your career in archaeology. If you're still in school, thinking about going back, just getting started, or want to take the next step, Go Dig a Hole has you covered. All right, now let's get on with the show. Before we get into the show, I'd like to share a quick note to you, the listeners. First, I'd like to thank all of the generous sponsors on Patreon. After the last episode, I had a few new Patreon subscribers. So I'd like to individually thank Nikki Martinson, Kevin Ricks, Ryan Swanson, Rende Durham, and Brent Murphy. If you'd like to support Go Dig a Hole on Patreon, you can just go to patreon.com/GoDigAHole. Also, pardon any weird noises you hear during the course of this episode. The renovation crew at my apartment complex decided to start tearing off the siding as soon as I sat down to record. So I did my best trying to get to the quietest place in the house, which was the laundry room. But some weird noises do come through. So bear with me. I'll be in a much quieter place here pretty soon. Okay. So welcome to the 28th episode of the Go Dig a Hole podcast. Today, I've got Dr. Alex Jones with me. She is the founder and director of Archaeology in the Community. It's a nonprofit group dedicated to public archaeology programs based in the Washington, D.C. area. I had Dr. Jones on the show a few episodes ago, and we were covering a very different topic about the Society for Black Archaeologists, and we touched on race in archaeology. This episode's going to be a little bit different. We'll be devoting the show to talking about archaeology in the community, and Dr. Jones has a lot of cool news updates on that. So, Dr. Jones, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, just to recap, let's talk a little bit about what archaeology in the community is and what all your organization does.
So, Archaeology in the Community is an archaeology education nonprofit. We're based in the Mid-Atlantic region. We have three programmatic tiers. We work primarily with youth and youth programs. We also have professional development, and that's featured in our teacher training program that we do jointly with Montpelier, as well as a number of internships and volunteer opportunities. And then occasionally we'll have programs geared towards graduate students on training in archaeology. And then our last tier is what we call community programs, and that is where our Day of Archaeology program falls under, as well as a lot more of our programs geared towards adult education about archaeology. And those programs are done in kind of fun and creative ways.
Very cool. So I guess let's go ahead and cut to the chase since you had mentioned the Day of Archaeology Festival. I'm seeing on your website, archaeologyincommunity.com, the Day of Archaeology Festival is set to go off on July 15th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Dumbarton House Museum in Washington, D.C. And you've done this festival for several years, right?
Yes. We're the only one of its kind in the United States. There is one somewhat similar, but it's more focused on the particular museum. But we're the only sole just archaeology all day festival in a fun and exciting way for families and kids.
That is really cool. I've been to similar festivals too, and it's like you said, they're similar, but it's not solely dedicated to archaeology. Like I went to one here in Portland that had, you know, kind of like a like public works and stuff attached to it. So what are some of the things that visitors can look forward to at the festival?
So Day of Archaeology Festival is basically one day where you can come to the museum. And it's kind of cool because the museum itself is that. It's a house museum. So the Dumbarton House is awesome. They're one of our great partners. They opened up the museum so people can tour the museum and the grounds all day for free. In addition to that, on every area of the grounds, you will find a different archaeology organization. And we kind of go after the full gamut. So we have federal, we have government archaeology organizations, we have state level, city level, other nonprofits. We have the ASM, the ASV. So pretty much, I try really hard to pull everybody. Even the Virginia Museum comes out, and they have a resident archaeologist, and she highlights what their organization does as far as archaeology and archaeology education and the programs they have. So walking around, you will see a number of organizations. And what we do is we're very purposeful about the festival. So if you come out as adults, it's not like you're going to be bored because it's only geared towards kids. But if you're also a family of four, there's stuff for kids to do as well as for the parents. So no one's bored. Everybody's engaged. Everybody's learning about something very different, very creative, high tech aspects of archaeology as well. So whatever pretty much you think of when you think of archaeology, we do have it represented there and then some.
That sounds huge. So what kind of attendance are you expecting?
Last year we had just over 500 people. So we are definitely expecting for more. We're pushing a little bit harder on our marketing aspect. So we're hoping to reach 700-800 people in the DC, Maryland, and Virginia area.
That's massive. That's really, really cool. And so what is the venue like, the Dumbarton House? Is it all going to be like indoors, or is it kind of indoor-outdoor?
Actually, it's all outdoor.
Okay.
Because the house itself is the museum, so which makes it a lot cooler because you have space. So we also, different organizations will have things either placed out on the grass. So last year we had one organization that was flint napping. So you could kind of sit down in the grass and watch that. We had another organization that kind of made it a U-shaped tent. So as you walked around to their different tables, you saw posters, you saw artifacts. So kind of the story of the site was completed with the kind of transition around the U. So yeah, it's definitely outside. And it's also July, which means please have sunscreen on. But we do have tents up. So as you walk under the tent to talk to the different archaeologists, you are shaded for that little bit of time.
Nice. Nice. That's pretty crucial for that part of the country. Yeah. Well, that's really cool. And so you had mentioned too that you're getting creative about your sponsorship and your partnering. And I noticed in your recent Do More 24 campaign that you had partnered with the United Way. Do you have support like that for the Day of Archaeology Festival?
Traditionally, with the Day of Archaeology Festival, we go after corporate sponsors. So for the third year in a row, we have been extremely happy and excited to partner with Stantec. And for most archaeologists, at least on kind of the East Coast, Stantec is a CRM firm that does a lot of great work. So they, for the third year, are being a corporate sponsor. We've also had in the past a few local dentist offices and doctors as well to sponsor it. So most of our stuff is done on the local level as far as sponsorship is concerned.
That's awesome. And so in previous years, have you noticed that the attendance of the festival tend to be just interested members of the general public?
Everybody. We've tried really hard again, my big thing with this is that as archaeologists, we often talk about how stakeholders, you know, trying to get them interested, involved, excited about. And so one of the big things with archaeology in the community is I'm very committed to finding innovative and creative ways of getting our communities and all communities involved in and invested in archaeology. So even we take our marketing campaign the same way. So if you look at our social media sites, we have the posters up, the flyers up, of which are going to get a lot heavier as we go. We put ads in the Washington Post in DC. We run ads on the radio stations. We also put ads out on WIDA's community calendar and everything else. So we try to go and pretty much pull in as many people as we possibly can, or through the various media outlets, so that we're not just getting one demographic, but we're reaching everybody in these areas.
That is that I mean, I can't even find the word for that. That's a model for how it should be done, it sounds like. So that's very impressive. And so what are some of the outcomes you've seen of the festival as it's progressed? Like, have you had partnerships developed through the event, or kind of more education opportunities geared more specifically to like classrooms or certain school groups?
For us, we definitely have more people who are interested in, who sign up for our newsletters, who are basically watching what programs we're producing throughout the year, so that they can be involved or their kids can be involved. But for us, the bigger thing is serving as a vehicle or a medium for other archaeology organizations to get their information out. And oftentimes what happens is, I mean, people are walking around saying, we didn't even know this existed. I didn't know I could do this. I didn't know I could volunteer. So what I'm finding more so is not so much, we don't do it so much for us as, you know, archaeology in the community, but it's more so done to really advance Mid-Atlantic archaeology and to get the word out and to kind of work as a partner and a collaborator with all of the archaeology organizations in the region.
Nice. Well, that's really impressive. Let's talk about some of the other programs you had. I had mentioned in passing the Do More 24 campaign, and if I'm understanding right, that was a fundraising campaign for archaeology in the community. How did that go?
We raised more money than we did last year. We raised about $2,800 during that campaign, which is good, because for us, that means that we can offer scholarships for our archaeology club in the fall, as well as we will have money to put towards marketing, which is like the most expensive thing for our festival coming up.
Yeah, so. Nice. And mm-hmm. You also had... You recently completed a program in Belize. What were you doing with that program?
So for the third year in a row, archaeology and the community partnered with the U.S. State Department in Belize to do community outreach programs. And that partnership with the embassy is a partnership between the U.S. government and the Institute of Archaeology of Belize. And what happened during that, we came in, partnered with the Institute of Archaeology, and traveled around the country going to schools that the Institute had identified would benefit from, education about archaeology. And all schools benefit from it, but they just identified, you know, for this particular program, one from each district that they thought would really benefit and be, it would help advance kind of heritage preservation, understanding of archaeology. And it went phenomenal. We as usual, we got a lot of wonderful feedback, not just from the students, but from parents, community members. We also did something a little bit different this go around, where we held a session with customs and police officers.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the feedback was wonderful. One thing was just letting customs and police officers know that, hey, for the past like week, I have traveled around the country with the Institute, and we have given them the same message to all of the kids, which is, if you see something, tell a police officer. So you're aware of what the kids are being told and what they're going to come to you with, you know, and then talking to them about, how do you handle this? How do you work with the community? What are other ways you can kind of spread the message beyond just these particular workshops that are being conducted by the Institute? What are some things you can do in every day? So it was a really great community program and a really great collaboration between not only U.S. government talking about the MOA and the renewal of the MOA with the Institute of Archaeology, but also looking at how we're stepping down from the government level, and these messages from the two governments are being passed through the community all the way down to the lowest level of kids.
Desert West Environmental, a 100% woman-owned, disadvantaged small business enterprise based in Ogden, Utah, Jesseville, Arkansas, and Chattanooga, Tennessee, is your one-stop shop for cultural, biological, geological, paleontological, and environmental assessment needs. Desert West uses paperless, digital field recording methods and lean management strategies to complete fieldwork across several environmental disciplines, handling NEPA and NHPA compliance contracts throughout the western and southeastern United States. The mission of Desert West Environmental staff is to provide top-quality environmental consulting services to their clients. Their goal is to provide these services in a timely and cost-effective manner, with an ongoing comprehensive quality control program to provide 100% customer satisfaction. The company's owner, Sonia Huttmacher, considers each contract an agreement not just between a business and its customers, but between partners that wish to create a close and mutually beneficial long-term relationship. Desert West Environmental is a proud sponsor of the Go to Go Whole podcast. Visit their site at dwestenv.com and find them on Twitter and Facebook.
That's, again, very impressive. And so I can see that that work is so well thought out and constructed. So you've actually completed the entire loop in, you know, creating like a system that harmonizes, you know, because otherwise, you know, there are community programs that if there's not the, you know, the administrative level support for it, then the system breaks right there. So that's cool that you've got customs and police on board with that, so that, you know, when you're telling the community, if you see something, say something, that those officials that they're saying something to know what to do with that information.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome, and it's pretty great to be a part of it and to actually watch it come to fruition and seeing how, and over the past 3 years, how the program has kind of blossomed and changed a little bit. And there's talks of potentially adding a teacher component to it as well.
That is great. And having spent a good number of years in Belize myself, I've come to learn that the people of Belize are very proud of their cultural heritage. And that goes into a large part of the country's income as tourism and ecotourism and you know, tourism centered on cultural heritage. So that's great that it's going to, you know, support things that they value really, really greatly.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice because one of the few things that has come out of the project is outside of kind of the governmental level where I'm brought in as a contractor to do this work. It's nice because the Institute and I, we have cartoon characters, Jin and Darren, that AITC created last year. And we've actually created a virtual Institute of Archaeology in Belize so that they could use to teach kids with and take out and take pictures and kind of create a program using those as well to kind of further what they're already doing. And they're doing a phenomenal job of doing. So I'm, you know, very proud as a person, you know, working with AITC to also say, hey, you know, I'm an integral part in, you know, being able to help out and continue their mission of cultural heritage, but also to be able to help in a small way, keep that going.
Yeah, that is really great. So what are some of the other things that you've got coming up in the future then?
So in July, well, first we have the Day of Archaeology Festival, which is our huge thing. But wonderfully enough, the very next day, we start our second annual teacher dig program, which is a joint project between Archaeology in the Community and Montpelier. And basically, teachers come down, they've already applied for the program, They come down for 1 week. And during this week, it's a collaboration where they are learning about archaeology, actually conducting excavations and learning about lab procedures directly from the Montpelier archaeology staff. And in the afternoons, I'm sitting down with them and I'm teaching them lesson plans, how to teach archaeology in the classroom. And it's being broke down into a way where I'm working with different grade levels. So I'm working with anybody who's in primary school, anybody who's middle school, high school, and then I'm also breaking it down into studies. So if you're science or math, and teaching them how you can teach this lesson plan on the different levels, through different subjects, what components you can add and subtract in order to make it more applicable to your students. And we go through a week of that. In addition to, I give them time to identify archaeological sites in their areas. And these teachers are coming from all over the United States. So these just aren't teachers from the Mid-Atlantic region. Last year, we had teachers from Colorado, from Utah. So all over. But that's our next big or next two big endeavors that we're engaging in for July.
That is huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can understand how you're so tired and strapped for time lately with keeping all this going on. So I'm really interested to just kind of shift gears a little bit to the educational aspect of it. There's a lot on the public archaeology side, but it sounds like there's a lot of like kind of a very focused education that goes on. What are some of the teaching goals and outcomes? Like what would, as someone who's like interested in like education and public archaeology, what are some of the like methods that you're using that have been particularly successful in like just the teaching part of this?
So when you say teaching, my question is, do you mean to the kids? Do you mean to adults? Do you mean to graduate students? What exactly do you mean when you say teaching? Yeah.
So it's all of the above. I guess let's start with the kids and move up.
So one of the rare things, and I think you don't find it very often in our field, is that I was actually trained as an educator first. So I actually have a minor in secondary education, and I taught in sixth grade while I was actually getting my master's degree, and then later just completely switched into archaeology. So one of the benefits I have is that I actually come from a strong education background, and many archaeologists don't have that, which is why kind of some of these concepts of how to work with kids, how to teach on the different levels, things such as, you know, word banks and how those adjust and change per grade level, thinking about state standards, county standards, what are the standards in math and science? Those are all things that we don't think about because we aren't trained as educators. And for me, that's something that I focus on because it makes us a stronger entity. It makes us more marketable, especially when talking with schools, other teachers, other education programs, going after grants that look for actual education programs. It's something that makes us pretty phenomenal at what we do to not toot our own horn. But I'm very big on making sure that whatever age group I'm working with, that I'm also trying to align the lessons, the conversation around things that they're also studying in the classroom or will be studying in the classroom that year. So those are some of the things that I think that I put into play, and that, you know, some of our interns who come in and work with us, we all put into play and we think about, and we're very purposeful in how we create the programs, the lessons, the curriculum for our various programs, because we want to make sure that all of our programs have maximum input or, maximum outcome, and that the students are gaining, I guess, the most that they possibly can. And that one thing we're not doing is teaching over them, but the other thing that we're also not doing is teaching under them, where we're not challenging them to think outside of the box and think creatively.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've seen a group of students
or even a tour group of just interested members of the public go through an archaeology event or tour a site or something like that. And it can either be going over them or under them and just kind of hitting all over the place. And it just bores them out of their skulls. And so I think it's really cool that you've got a background in teaching and that you've got really your finger on the pulse of how to effectively get this knowledge into people and you know, what reasonable goals and outcomes even look like. So that's a really useful skill that I think a lot of archaeologists, you know, might want to pick up along the way, you know, just take some training. And when I was in grad school, I was fortunate. I was a TA when I was in grad school. And so before I was allowed to teach a lecture class, I had to complete a teaching seminar. And so I had to go through this several month long course, and they gave me a little certificate at the end of it. But there were so many things that I learned along the way that just made me kind of more aware in that whenever someone, even if it's at a conference presentation, whenever someone's like really effectively conveying knowledge, I try and take note on like their methods and stuff like that, because that has become something that is just really fascinating to me. And I think that, you know, lately the topic of effective science communication has been a really hot issue with, you know, archaeologists, but also broader in the sciences. And so it's really great to see an example like archaeology in the community that's so active in, you know, very public facing events and very effective educational goals and programs and all that. So, you know, congratulations. That's really awesome.
Thanks. I mean, it is a team. I do have quite possibly, I think, like the most awesome team of interns ever, and have had over the past year a really great group of interns who really want to learn and really are interested in pushing kind of the envelope and how community archaeology is being done. And so they come with very creative and innovative ideas. So
that is great. What are some of the backgrounds of the interns that you get working with archaeology in the community?
Most of our interns, the majority of them, are graduate students or recent undergraduate students who are kind of in transition. So I would say on average, our interns normally work with us anywhere from 3 to 6 month stints. And they have traveled the world with me to teach archaeology. They have created videos. They have created our Jen and Darren cartoons, activity pages, lesson plans. Pretty much everything that we have in some way, shape, or form, one of our interns has helped create, even down to our kids page. I thought it was completely creative, and as simple as the idea is, I never thought about it, but our original kids program, one of our interns decided to do a focus group with kids. Tell us what you think of our website, and do you like it? Would you not like, you know, tell us what we could do better. And literally our very new website for kids that we just launched is based on that focus group and feedback. They're very, very awesome and have a lot to do with the magic that happens at Archaeology in the Community.
That is great. And I'm poking around on the kids page right now, and it's great. It's something that I want to do all the little puzzles and stuff just because it looks fun. But that's amazing. And, you know, like you had mentioned earlier when I was asking about, you know, the methods and the goals and outcomes of teaching, you know, the website, again, is archaeologyincommunity.com. It's focused on every single, you know, group that can be interested in archaeology. And I'm seeing in the programs and events menu, you've got, you know, things for youth, things for the community, things for archaeologists, and it's very well thought out and organized too. There's you know, all the ways to support archaeology in the community. And of course, I can't leave this off of the show.
the apparel page, because the Love Archaeology shirt is awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We wanted archaeologists and people who love archaeology to kind of give them a way to push our message without us always having to be there as archaeologists. So I figured, what better way than to just, you know, run around the world telling everybody how much you love archaeology. And it apparently, I've had feedback. It has started quite a few conversations. So it's working.
Nice. So. Nice. Well, are there any other things that you'd like to talk about with archaeology in the community, or even anything else you're working on?
I think we covered it all, but what I would like to say is please check out our website. Even though we are a Mid-Atlantic organization, we do have a second pilot program coming up in another international location this year that we're kind of keeping a little hush-hush, and you know, but our webpage is designed to be global, and it is made so that anybody and everybody can go to and learn something. We do have a community archaeology blog. So anybody who is an archaeologist interested in archaeology, an archaeology student, can submit posts to our community blog. It's been going for 2 years. It is quite popular, and we have a number of sites, methods, and really informative information on the blog, as well as we have a video series called The Dig, where we feature different archaeological sites. So if somebody wants to visit or see a site but can't travel, you can go through and watch the video and get a tour and actually hear from the archaeologists excavating that site. So we really, really have tried to create different programs and different things where people can be active, even on the graduate student level. I know we are a nonprofit, so giving money is not always feasible, but giving your time and contributing and volunteering in some way, whether it's shooting one of the videos to tell the kids about what you do as a graduate student, or writing a blog post, or even answering one of our postcards for our kids for our Message to an Archaeologist program. All of it helps, all of it's important. And so please check out our website.
That is so cool. And I've said it in passing a few times that archaeology in the community is a model for how public archaeology programs should be done. But I didn't realize how apt that was when you said that you're launching another international program. So it's the model of archaeology in the community. It's really cool to see that, you know, traveling and expanding to other places.
We're excited.
Nice. Well, thanks again for joining the show, Dr. Jones. I really look forward to staying in touch and, you know, hearing more about the programs. And I can't wait to see the international program get unveiled, too.
All right. Thank you very much. And it was, as usual, wonderful being on the show.
Thanks.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of Go Dig a Hole. As always, you can contact me by email at christopher@godigahole.com or on the Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram, or Snapchat. We've got all the social media bases covered, all at Go Dig a Hole. Don't forget to check out the blog at godigahole.com for long-form companion posts to most of the episodes. Special thanks to Louisville post-punk band Invaders for letting me use their song Dig a Hole for the show's bumper music. Check them out on Bandcamp and download their album by the same name, Dig a Hole. This show was produced and edited by me, your host, Christopher Sims. You can check out the show notes from this and all the other great podcasts on the Archaeology Podcast Network on archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Until next time, go dig a hole.
This show is produced by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle, and was edited by Chris Webster and Chris Sims.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.